It is not my job as the host of this fine After Hours radio show to play matchmaker, but I just wanted to take the opportunity for two old pals to say hello to one another. Ron Rappaport, you've just been listening to talk about his fabulous book, Frank Chance's Diamond, the Baseball Journalism of Bryn Lardner. And on the other coast, Ron is in California, and on the other coast is Rick Tellender, who's going to talk for, until 6:30 about his new book, A Sweet Dreams, Poems and Paintings for the Child of Bed. Okay, you old friends, say hello to one another.
Hello, Rick.
Hey, Rap.
How are you?
You there, bud?
Not to be in Chicago, either one of
you. You know what? I got to tell you, I was looking at something. You were a columnist for the Sun-Times for over 20 years. I've now been there, let me think, 28 years? We've been there for a half a century, and I don't think we overlapped for a day. So,
Oh, my.
That's either amazing or terrifying or something, but...
But I think
to hear from me, Rap.
Yeah, I think you two guys are sort of following the footsteps of Bryn Lardner, because you both are wonderfully prolific and you write for the joy and love of writing. And one day, Ron, when you get to town, when you come up here, and who would come here in February? But next time you're up here, we will gather at some place where journalists used to gather and share memories. I'm just glad you guys got to say it. Pardon me?
Are those places still left? Anyway?
And the Billy Goat is still there, and it doesn't attract the crowd that it used to attract. But Rick and I know the way, and we'll show you how to get back there, Ron. Ron, thanks a million, and good luck with the book. It's really fabulous.
Thank you.
It's really fabulous. Thanks for staying on to say hi to Rick.
Yeah, take care.
And that was nice, Rick. Don't you think? I mean, you guys never overlap. That wow, that surprises me.
I saw that. Started calculating when he was there, and then when I started in 1995, and he'd been there. God, I mean, honestly, without having dreamed of it, Ron Rappaport and I have become kind of like the partial voice of the Sun-Times for. I mean, like a half century.
Half a century.
Oh, my God.
No, that's really something. I mean, I think it's incredibly impressive. And I think it's also incredible that, you know, the era that you guys covered. I can't, Rick, now see some young. I just don't know how it could happen. So some young, even good writer could be drawn to, you know, sports journalism as it has existed for such a long time. You know what I mean?
Oh, I know exactly what you mean. I've lamented it, and I've never wanted to be one of those people that just said you should have been here back then.
Sure.
Every old man sits around on the rocking chair, you don't know what it was like. But, you know, times change. And I can tell you for sure, Rick, and I think you know this, there are still great writers out there.
Oh, no question.
Writers, somehow their forum will stay way or other.
No, you're right. Their voice will be heard. You people who are lucky enough to still subscribe to the Chicago Tribune, I hope you still subscribe to the Chicago Tribune. Sometimes, too. Read in last Sunday's paper a story that I wrote about Mr. Tellender and his unbelievable, charming, artful book. It is called Sweet Dreams, Poems and Paintings for a Child of Bed. You may have seen him being interviewed by Paris Schutz on TV, but maybe you have never heard of this book. Rick, the seed of this book, to my mind, is just fascinating. It came out of a very, very rough time you were having.
Yes. It was 30 years ago, 31 years ago now, and I was in a hospital bed for 2.5 weeks, hooked up to more tubes than I can count, and, you know, bad ones. I mean, in my stomach, going down, I mean, it's just awful. And I, there was something wrong with my intestines or whatever's in my stomach. They couldn't figure it out for 2.5 weeks. And I didn't eat the entire time, and they were able to stop the pain. What turned out to be was an infection. They finally just said, you know, the hell with it. We're doing exploratory surgery, and they found all this infection in there.
Ugh.
So anyway, but I wasn't in pain after all, but I was so nauseated. And nausea is a weird thing that we all feel when we get food poisoning or you know, some kind of flu or whatever, but you hope you don't have it day after day after day, which I did. And when you have nausea, I mean, you're unable to concentrate. You can't read. I couldn't read a book. I couldn't watch TV. I started to watch a movie, and I didn't even know what I was looking at. I hated looking at the wallpaper in this hospital room. Everything about it was driving me crazy. And I literally started, whatever reason, almost instinctively, you need to communicate something at least to yourself. I started writing poems in my head. And the very first ones I remember, I was thinking about winter and snow falling down and it being soft and maybe a blessing and a cooling shield for someone who has a fever. This is just kind of imagery in my head. And I started, you know, I had so much time to do it.
Sure.
Then it just, I would like memorize some of these things. And I had a few poems done. Then I would try to write them down. But I decided, you know what? I'm so sick and I'm an adult and I don't know how this is going to end, whether it ends really badly.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I'm going to check out or whatever. But a kid, any younger person would be terrified to be in this condition I'm in. And then I also started to think about just going to bed each night, the transition from being awake to sleeping, which is one of the most conditions. Who are we when we're sleeping?
Yeah.
How do we make that transition? And, you know, it's kind of terrifying.
Well,
so I wanted to write some poems that would help people soothe kids and anybody as they made that transition, or they were sick and confined to bed, however it worked out.
Well, one of the great things about the way in which you were brought up, that poetry was indeed part of your life from the time you were a very young guy in Peoria growing up and playing quarterback for the team down there, and that's what you studied. Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people think, huh? Rick Callender, didn't he play football? He played football. He writes about football. You were an English major with a focus on poetry at Northwestern, were you not?
Yes, I was. English literature major, creative writing major, and poetry by my senior, taking a lot of poetry classes. There was one other guy in the football team, a walk-on, named George Greenfield, the entire time I was there, who was an English literature major who ever took a class, anybody I could ever really talk to about it. And, you know, George is a great guy, but he was never in a million years going to play. And, you know, the coaches didn't really want you to be in something like that. And I know that my coach, Alex Agassi,
sure,
you know, World War II Marine who fought in Iwo Jima, had two Purple Hearts. And he looked at me, you know, he was fascinated by me, terrified, and
yeah, what do you
just never could
grasp?
Figure myself out either.
Yeah, you're not what? You're not a phys ed major. What are you doing? Why are you reading that book? But you were inspired too. I mean, I reread a lot of it, and having talked to you about your new book, I reread a lot of A Child's Garden of Verses, that amazing collection by Robert Louis Stevenson. That book really inspired you while you were in the hospital, sort of writing portions of poems in your head to stay warm and safe.
Yes, absolutely. That was it. The Child's Garden of Verses was an old book when I was a kid.
Sure.
You know, Stevenson wrote it, and he was a sickly child, you know, and not a healthy man. And so I realized when you're not healthy or when you have to be far more internal and you can't go out and play with everybody, you think about these things.
Yeah.
And he wrote these poems particularly, Rick, because I'm sure you saw that one, The Land of Counterpain, which is about a little boy or a little girl. I think it's a little boy sitting in his bed, lying in his bed, and in front of him are all of his toys, his little leaden soldiers and things. And he talks about this kingdom. And you quoted it in your article.
Yeah, the beginning of that poem, yeah. When I was sick.
It's a wonderful thing. And he talked about it as being a beautiful thing instead of it being horrible that I'm sick in bed.
Yeah, it begins, and you should read it, ladies and gentlemen, the whole thing. When I was sick and lay abed, I had two pillows at my head, and all my toys beside me lay to keep me happy all the day. It's just a lovely, lovely poem. So now I'm sure people are asking, so you successfully beat back this infection, and they had to operate, and you get out of the hospital.
Well, I'm here.
And then you got to make a living. So the press of other duties, writing for Sports Illustrated and then going to the Sun-Times 28 or so years ago. What did you do with those? Did you finally get home and write them down, Rick? Or
well, it took a long process. It's not like they just all flowed out of me. I probably had a half dozen done, and then I realized, or I knew, always in my mind, I just had this image. I must have one full page that's going to be an illustration, because illustrations were really important to me as a kid.
Well, art,
N.C. Wyeth, and he would illustrate some of those things. You know, he was, one of the Wyeth family that did those, legendary things.
Of course.
Like Christina's World. And so that began the process of writing more and more poems, but finding an artist, a different artist for each one of the 42 poems.
Yeah, yeah.
And I counted, it was 14 or 15 from the Chicago area, and certain ones, like Tony Fitzpatrick, mm-hmm. John Sanford. I love John Sanford. He did a great painting for this poem. I did a really silly little one, very quick, called Lucky Ducks.
Mm-hmm.
And the painting is great. You see, I can recite it. It's just almost like a nursery rhyme. If you see a duck, it brings good luck. If you see two, much better for you. If you see three, then you will see. When you see four, there will be more. So he took this idea, we talked about it, and he has a pond, and you can see the cattails, and you see a couple ducks very clearly, and then you see a third one or a fourth one. Oh, yeah. And you realize a little child is looking at this. You see the child's face reflected in the pond, and then you realize you're also looking up in the sky reflected off the pond, and you start counting other ducks. And I talked to John the other day. He said there's 44 ducks you can count. I don't know if there's that many. It's just a wonderful thing for a kid to look over at the illustration while somebody's reading them the poem. I think, Rick, because I always loved that when my mom would read a poem to me or my older sister, Marcy.
Sure. Well, and the other thing, Rick Tallender, for you is not only was poetry part of your youth and growing up, so was visual art. I mean, you remember painting and making art since, you didn't give it up when teachers always said, hey, and I think too many kids give it up when the teacher goes, no, you have to draw between the lines here. And you go, well, okay, I'm finished with that. No, thanks. But you never did give it up. I mean, visual art has been a part of your personal life and your taste forever, too, as has poetry. That's why I think this book is such a wonderful, wonderful melding of those two. What do you have to call? You just have to call passions of yours, Rick. Sweet dreams.
Well, thank you, Rick. It is. I mean, this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. I wouldn't mind doing another book, because this one, seems to be doing well, and thank you for all of your talk about it. I have more ideas, but this was one. There's me and a book designer, freelance book designer, who's done lots and lots of CD covers and lots of other designing. His name is Al Brantner.
Yeah.
Without him, I couldn't have done this. He was in Chicago, and Tony Fitzpatrick said, I said to Tony, I knew Tony.
The great connector. The great connector. Yeah.
A great connector. And Tony, I wrote a story about him for Chicago Magazine years ago, and it wasn't about painting. It was about poetry. He was in the Poetry Slam.
Yep.
And, he's a great big gruff guy, and he had these great poems that he declaimed at, I think it was at the Green Mill.
Sure,
of course.
So
I knew him, and he said, well, I know this guy, Al Brantner, you got to get him. And then I said, Tony, I wrote this one poem, and it's called Mother, and I need a tattoo artist, a really good one, because I can see what this should be. I know the kind of art I want it to be. And so we got to have this guy, Nick Bubash, who's in Pittsburgh, who went to the Pennsylvania School of Fine Art. He was a fine artist, but also a tattoo artist.
And it's totally decorated many parts of Tony's body, too. Yeah.
well,
and Tony just took his shirt off and said, here, look.
Did he do, Tony?
I don't think he did all of them, but Tony knows how to find a good tattoo artist. There's no question about that. Rick, I want to keep you on all the way till 6:30 if you can. I know you're kind of on vacation, resting up for, I guess you got to cover the Super Bowl, don't you? Do you?
Well, I'm not going to it, but there's all kinds of things. We got a couple couple of columnists down,
sure,
football writers there. So,
I was just talking with.
Hope they come home.
I have an idea for you. So I was just talking with Brett Jackson, who's one of the engineers here, and we're talking about Patrick Mahomes' father getting arrested for the third time with a DUI. And Brett says, guy makes $43 million a year. Get your dad a driver. That would be a good way to spend some of that.
You know, he had a 15-year pro NBA career.
I know. And, I
mean, I'm sure he's got money. You know, I mean, listen.
Yeah.
I know that, you know, that drinking and stuff. And it's just, after, this is his third one. I mean, really.
Yeah, really.
Hire a driver full-time. I'm really sorry this happened.
Yeah,
really,
me too.
Really
me too. It overshadows a lot of stuff. We're going to stay on with Rick Tellender. He's going to get into, in the next half hour after the news, how the collaborative effort between Rick and his poetry and the artists is endlessly fascinating to me, and we will probe that again. The title of his book, and it's not just a book for children, believe me, it is Sweet Dreams, Poems and Paintings for the Child Abed. We will be back. If you've been listening to me talk to Rick Tellender, you heard about how this book, his latest book, Sweet Dreams, Poems and Paintings for a Child Abed, was sort of born 30-some years ago when he was in the hospital just trying to cope with a nasty disease. It's a long time in coming, but what it does, it pairs Rick's very, very good poetry with stunning visual artwork. Rick, thanks again for coming on and interrupting whatever your evening is this evening. When you would, you know a lot of artists, and you know you are a visual artist. And when you would read a poem, and you couldn't all of a sudden immediately say, oh, this would be perfect for Tony Fitzpatrick or Tim Anderson or so-and-so. There was some searching involved, was there not, and collaboration with the visual artist, yeah?
Yeah, there was a tremendous amount of searching, and you mentioned Tim Anderson, and, you know, one artist would tell me about another, and I would look online or find a book or something with their paintings so I could match them up. And from Tim Anderson, who does fabulous portraits of people, he is amazing. These people are world famous, too, a lot of these artists. But he told me about Peggy McNamara, and he knew Peggy well. She's the artist in residence at the Field Museum. She does watercolors. You'll see them if you go to the Field Museum. So many of her scrolls and, you know, dinosaurs and things like that. And I had a poem called Dinosaur Time, about dinosaurs wandering through a kid's room at night while he or she is sleeping. And I had Peggy, and Peggy's like, yeah, of course. You know, and then I found other artists by finding their styles, the type of paintings they did in books of illustrations that all these huge advertising agencies like Gray Advertising or, you know, all that. Chicago's legendary for advertising.
No question. Burnett.
Yeah, and these big books are weighed probably 10 pounds a piece, glossy paper with very wide, they're big, and it would go page after page of illustrators throughout the country who might possibly do their art for some, you know, advertising agency, because that's how a lot of artists made a living.
Oh, sure.
Back in the day.
Sure. But what a great...
And so I found them that way. Yeah.
But what a great exploration for you, I think. You must have seen, you know, literally hundreds of artists, and you trusted your own aesthetic, whatever it is, your own aesthetic soul, to say, oh my God, this one would be perfect for this. And many of them you just called very cold and said, hi, I'm Rick Tellender, I've written a poem. And tell me about what that experience must have been like, to say, hi, my name is Rick Tellender, I've written a poem, I'd love for you to illustrate it. There's no money in poetry, so illustrate for me. What was that like? When you had, did you make some cold calls like that?
Oh, a lot. Listen, Rick, life is sales. I don't care what you do.
No,
you better know how to sell your product. So, you know, some people are like, I called a guy in Spain. You know, I'm not sure he spoke English. And I can't remember how that one turned out. But I talked to a woman, a magnificent artist named Anita Kuntz in Canada. And then I cold call a guy in a little town of Calm, England, about 80 miles west of London, whose art I had seen, and it blew me to pieces. He had just re-illustrated The Wind in the Willows.
Oh, wow.
A classic English book.
Sure.
And he did The Night Before Christmas, and instead of it being humans, they're all animals that are, you know, in human form, and it's just, and Santa Claus is a polar bear. And I said, oh, my gosh. Okay, this guy, I've got to have. And I don't know, what is it, 7 hours time difference?
Yeah.
And, you know, I said, hi, Chris. His name is Chris. Yeah, I'm Red Tellender. Oh, good. Nice to talk to you, mate, or whatever they say.
Yeah.
That's Australia.
Well.
So, yeah, that's how it worked out. And 90% of them were captivated by the idea.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Here's the other thing, Rick. I maybe never made clear the big selling point. When and if this becomes profitable, you know, the money is made back for what it costs to do, they all participate in the profits. And I'm going to have to break it down. Three of them have passed away, including the fabulous...
The great Ed Paschke. Yeah.
Ed Paschke.
And Nick Bubesch, who you were talking about earlier.
Nick Bubesch, the tattoo artist. Let's see, who, Julian Allen, great artist, but... we're going to have royalties for 40 different artists. And so, you know, and I think they dug that too.
Yeah. Well, I think talking about being a good salesman, you call these people and say, and as any reputable artist would say, well, yes, what's the remuneration for this might be? And you say, well, nothing right now, and maybe nothing, because again, there's famously no money in poetry. But I think they were just captivated with the idea, and it was a sort of interesting challenge for them. You would then, while you were talking
to, the other thing is, Rick. I told them that they could keep the painting.
Yes, of course. Yeah, you weren't asking to display them in your home. You said,
no,
yeah.
I wanted a high resolution image that Al Brandner, the book designer, could put in there. And a guy like Mark McMahon, who helped me tremendously, another
sure.
artist. And John Rush, fabulous artist in the Chicago area. I feel bad about not mentioning them all. Douglas Clava.
Go ahead.
I mean, it's just Jason Millett. I don't know. I said John Rush. Oh, Maria Vec, Bill Vec's daughter.
Right, right.
She did one called Prism. And, you know, Maria is like, oh, yeah, okay, this is a sports writer guy. You know, why not?
Yes, I know.
And my dad owns the White Sox. Yeah, okay.
Okay. That's one of, I think, you know, Rick Tellender, the way that this project came together, the long nurturing period of it, and then the way you're talking about how it came together with these artists, that's one of the underlying charms that I think is can be felt viscerally with this thing. It's a labor of real love, and I think not all of these artists. I don't think Tim has any. Not all of these artists have kids, but I think many of them understood what this could do for. I think it's great. I mean, I love the book. I've already given it. And now at my age, it's like, here, so-and-so, this is for your grandkids. Go read this to your grandkids instead of your kids. We got to take one more break, and we'll come back and talk a little more with Rick about the remarkable book. It's called Sweet Dreams, Poems and Paintings for the Child of Bed, published by, what's the publisher, Rick? I can't remember.
Skyhorse Publishing.
And we'll talk. I want to know how that event went at the bookstall in Winnetka. We'll be back in a couple minutes, ladies and gentlemen. I have a few more minutes with my friend and the talented sports columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times and the author of many, many books. the most, perhaps, I don't know if it's the most notable book, but 1976, Heaven is a Playground, is one of the most remarkable books I've ever read. And you were like kind of Ring Lardner, you write sports, but you also publish books. And the latest is Sweet Dreams, Poems and Paintings for the Child of Bed. It will comfort any child, but it will also comfort any age of a person. I really believe that. You had an event, I think last weekend, maybe at the great book stall in Winnetka, reading the book and showing the artwork. How did that go? What was the crowd like, Rick?
Well, it was great for, book signings. Any artist or any author will tell you there have been book signings they go to and like one person shows up.
Oh, tell me about it. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Everybody knows. So, no, it was crowded. The book stall was great. Four artists showed up.
Oh, how neat.
And I want to tell you something, Rick. It was terrific, the book stall. They were so generous. But there is going to be an event April 16th in Chicago. It's a ticketed thing I'm not putting on. These other people are putting on for me at the Haymarket House, a completely redesigned Haymarket House on 800 West Buena. And it's going to be like, cheese and crackers and wine and beer and all that stuff. And as many artists as possible are going to come. The actual artists from the book, there were 42 different ones, including a secret one by yours truly.
Yes,
what it is. And if anybody, $30, you get a book. And if you're really hungry, don't eat dinner, come chow down on cheese and hors d'oeuvres.
I will remind people on the radio show, you say April 16th?
April 16th from 6 to 10 p.m. But they should email a guy, and his name is Rory, but it's Rory at haymarketbooks.org. So it's R-O-R-Y, Rory at haymarketbooks.org. You can just find out everything about it. You can get there. It's a beautiful place. Oh, my God, this mansion that Haymarket organization.
Well, sure.
You've been there, right?
Haymarket Publishing, run by Julie Fain, the wife of former CTU vice president, actually, Jesse Sharkey.
Yeah.
Lovely, lovely, wonderful people in a great, great publishing house. That's great. Maybe there'll be more events, too, because I think the combination, and, Rick and I met for a drink or two a week or so ago at the Billy Goat, just to remind us that we could still drink and get home, I suppose. And there were a few artists there who I did not know, and it was a joy to meet them. And I think, like Peggy McNamara, so many of these artists, Rick, are really pleased to be part of this book, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And, I'm glad they are, because this has to be a joyful thing. If it weren't, it would be a miserable thing. And I went through the misery when I was sick to do it. And Rick, I want to tell you an example, if I can.
Sure.
One story that I think is incredible. There's one poem called Down in the Valley, and it's illustrated by a fellow named Todd Tellender. How did I find out about Todd Tellender, whom I never had heard of? I got a Google alert that a car had gone out of control and crashed through the front window of the Tellender Art Gallery in Walla Walla, Washington. Okay, so clever. Listen, the reason I can talk to people and cold talk them, I have to interview athletes who don't want to talk to me.
Exactly.
So I got on the phone. I found this guy. I found the address and phone number of this place in Walla Walla, Washington. I called up just 5 minutes after I read the news. And this guy answers. And I said, "Hi, is this Todd Tellender?" And he said, "Yes." I said, "Listen, I'm really sorry about the car crashing through the front window of your gallery. I hope you rebuild it. But I think we're relatives. And while you're rebuilding, would you mind illustrating a poem for me?" And he says, "Okay." And it turns out, I guess, we're third cousins. My daughter tracked down through 23andMe. It's a beautiful poem, I got to tell you. And it's... I don't know, did I have a chance that I can read one real quick?
Sure.
Okay. I actually did this for my sister, Marcy, my older sister, who lives in Colorado. And I have a younger sister, love to death, love my older sister, Marcy. She's the true poet in the family. Mm-hmm. She is amazing. It's called Down in the Valley. And I did it for my cousin because I knew his style. It's a beautiful painting of a little kid lying on a hillside. And you look, you can tell he's looking out at this lovely river valley off in the distance. And it's a beautiful blue sky with clouds. And if you look in the foreground carefully, you can see a pair of crutches. Mm. And it's reminiscent, as I said, of Christina's world earlier about the Wyeth painting.
Sure.
So anyway, it goes, just over the rise where the river runs through, there down in the valley where yellow meets blue. Someday I'll go walking. I know that I will. And won't you come with me just over the hill? We slowly could stroll, and I'll take your hand. The sun and the clouds, the touch of the land. With you by my side, we'll see what is there. I dream it already, the smell of the air, the warm summer blooms, the wind in the trees, the soft running river, as sweet as you please. Oh, won't you go walking with me there someday? This won't last forever, I've heard what they say. I love you, it's true, and it comforts me yet, for I know you love me, so please don't forget. Just over the rise where the river will be, oh, sister, come with me to see what we see. And so that's
just
for my sister Marcy Tellender, illustrated by Todd, a distant cousin named Todd Tellender.
That is just a beautiful, beautiful poem. Has seeing your poetry between the covers of this magnificent book, and I want to tell you people also, the book only costs $19.95, which I think is one of the great literary bargains of our time. That's you're getting 42 pieces of original art and these fantastic poems, and now you have heard the stories behind some of them and how they came to be. Is this, seeing your work between covers like this, Rick, and not on a screen or on a piece of typewriter paper, has this empowered you as a poet? You told me for the story, you say, I guess I don't really consider myself a poet. Maybe I'm a sports writer with a poet's heart. But the poetry is very strong, solid, and moving. Has it empowered you of poetry, but has it empowered you to keep writing and still writing?
Well, I think so, Rick. Listen, you know, I put a lot of work into meter and mm-hmm. rhyme and rhythm and pacing. These poems go like 7-7-8, 7-7-8, all the way through. They're precise, so 8-6 or 4-4, 4-4. They're iambs, iambic pentameter. There's iambs. All these things that I studied, I tried to make them adhere to the form of rhyming poetry. It's not blank verse. It's not free verse.
Right.
It's rhyming poetry in the style, the classic style of, you know, William Blake or Shakespeare, or any of those poets that we studied.
Sure.
Because I also think the kids and adults appreciate rhythm, rhyme, and meter.
Agreed.
And so, yeah, I did. I am pleased. It was hard work. I'd never, I don't know what to say, tell you the truth.
What do you think? Now, I'm asking you even a tougher question. What do you, years ago, you were the kid on a legendary TV program called The Sports Writers on TV. What might you imagine Ben Bentley, Bill Jouse, and Bill Gleason, your partners on that show, if you were to give them this book, what do you think those guys, and I knew them all pretty well too, I think they'd be charmed.
I know what they would say. Ben Bentley would have a cigar in the corner of his mouth. They'd say, young Tellender, but it's just something here that I didn't expect. And Gleason would say, he would come up and look at me, and he'd give me a kiss on the forehead.
Uh-huh.
That old Irish sentimentality. And Jousey would say, you know, Tellender's not bad for a guy that went to Northwestern. I think, I've read some stuff. We should, just a couple of things we can talk about here.
You captured them perfectly. Rick, it's an ongoing journey knowing you, of course, but it's a real, I can't wait to see what the next book is, because you now have this gathering of artists who I think would be more than happy to collaborate further with you. Again, the book is Sweet Dreams, Poems and Paintings for the Child Abed. Rick Tellender, take good care of yourself. Enjoy the Super Bowl if you can.
Thank you so much, Rick. I really appreciate it.
Okay, take care. Me too. It's a great book. It's just a great book.